essentially we left with you having the opportunity to think about my question about some sort of volume measurement.
Yes, sorry, your question.
Yes.
5 meters up versus on the ground.
Yes.
Okay. My thoughts on that are that
In a couple of places in both your rebuttal and your Section 42 evidence, you talk about, and I'm using it as an example, policy 38213. Which I think it's Real Journeys have commented upon, which is the one that says protect and enhance ecological values, including habitats for indigenous fauna. And they say that that's protect and enhance is a high test, and that it's hard for commercial users who use, because this is a general district-wide policy, it's hard for commercial users to meet that policy, and you say that it's a good idea to have some aspirational policies in the plan or something along those lines. You certainly support what you've called an aspirational policy in this regard. So I'm interested in why you consider a policy should or could be aspirational, in other words, something to aspire to, but maybe tricky in all instances, particularly in the light of the King Salmon decision and the need to carefully at the wording of policies like that and working. Someone coming to make an application, lake edge or a river edge, which is what Real Journeys is.
That's right.
Refreshing my memory from what I did use the word broader aspirations.
Yes.
And I was talking about
saying when they've, I mean, I'm not, I'm just, what they're particularly saying here is that, that we should, for something that's as aspirational as this, that should be focused on significant ecological values as a qualifier.
Mm-hmm.
But you've said, no, that's not helpful, that's too, it's narrowing the focus of the policy too much. And that there's nothing unreasonable about a policy promoting a broader aspiration for ecological values in council reserves. I'm interested in how you see aspirational policies fitting in a plan where we've got to be really careful about for application under section 104, they, for some reason or other, and we're going to have to look at the words of this policy. resource consent decision. Something that should be achieved in every instance.
Looking at it again.
Yes. The next one, it says protect open space, recreation and amenity values. So that's another topic, we're talking about amenity values, and it says by managing the adverse effects and conflicts of recreational activity. So that's quite a different level than that policy about ecological values. But they're both policies, both in the same sort of position in terms of
in every zone? Isn't that the question?
I mean, it purports to be.
Yes, it purports to be. But
on every site and every zone.
Yes, I mean that's
off the open space zone.
Yes, but you know, in the act of recreation, is it important to protect and hard ecological values?
Just including habitats for indigenous fauna, it's not. But this isn't just in areas of significant ecological value or ONLs or natural character areas. It's across all the zones. And what Real Journeys is saying is that it's a very high test for a policy.
And Chapter 33 contains policies for significant natural areas. So.
Yes. Well, we'll see what Real Journeys says. And if you want to come back to us later on, if you another concern, I think it's raised by Ben Farrell, but 9.2. Ben again for Real Journeys, is this question about considering benefits under restricted discretionary activities. He said that all these RDAs, the matters to which discretion is limited, are things to do with height or to do with the specific factor that consent's required for. And he says that there's no ability then under the restricted discretionary to be able to also have regard to the benefits of the activities that are being considered. And you say, oh no, that doesn't matter because those have already been adequately addressed, I think you're saying, in preparing the proposed plan and through the Section 32 evaluation to determine what activities are permitted and those that require consent. And so you don't think it's efficient to consider to allow consideration of benefits over and above the adverse effects that are being considered as an RDA. So I just wonder, I mean, I don't know the answer to this, obviously, because I'm asking you. For a restricted discretionary, under 104, it is limited to considering the matters that are listed. So might that preclude the consideration of positive effects, like the public benefits of having a clubhouse at the Wanaka Marina, if we want to go to that particular example. Now I know that might be all discretionary, but so can you consider the public benefits of the activity under an RDA which doesn't mention them? Yes, maybe it's a legal question. Yeah. Maybe you want to...
Maybe Ms. Scott, if you
maybe
want to
Maybe you
answer.
Need to give it to Ms. Scott to answer at some appropriate time. I mean, just say if you don't think you can answer.
I might need to
I don't think that's quite correct for an RDA. Might be for control. But anyway, I mean, maybe, again, something to come back to us on.
Yes. Excuse me, I can come back to you on that. I think we'd actually...
Yes, because I think that by the way that the Real Journeys has included it in their submission, it sounds like they haven't just limited their concerns to the open space zones, but other zones as well. Okay. My final question in my list here is about definitions. Now, I mean, one of the reasons I'm concerned about this is exactly the same thing came up in Christchurch in the open space chapter. Queensland Airport Corporation has requested that definitions be added for a whole list of activities, public amenities, organised sport and recreation, let's say informal recreation, and you've agreed to one for recreation facilities, but beyond that, you've just said that it's better to leave it to the ordinary meaning and just for people to interpret them in a more sort of straightforward and ordinary way. And then later in your evidence, you talk about a particular matter from the Wanaka Golf Club, where they're concerned that as to what definition a contracted golf professional falls within. And they are concerned that they might come within commercial recreational activity. And you've said, no, it would be more likely to be organised sport and recreation. And then you say, and so, I mean, to me, that's a classic example of where two different people, you on the one hand and Wanaka Golf on the other, have come to different positions as to what activity a golf professional would fall under. And so, I mean, it's a classic example of it, and I'm concerned at leaving too many interpretations of definitions to that sort of subjective assessment. I mean, even some of the words you just use are, it suggests that activities like this should be under organised sport rather than commercial recreation. I think, I mean, you don't want to suggest something may or may not be in a definition. You have to know, because it affects the status of the activity and whether an application's made. So, I mean, I wonder why you are loath to define some of these terms to avoid these sorts of potential arguments. I mean, we've already had a discussion, I think, with the Wanaka Marina about whether the yacht club's activities on yacht race days is informal recreation, which I think Ms. Galavazi thought it would be, or active sport and recreation, which the Commissioner thought it would be. And I mean, it's not very good practice to start from the fundamental problem that you don't know what activity you are, because in those zones, as we know from talking about that site, they're treated differently.
Right.
I mean, public amenities is another one where, in actual fact, in the transport zone, they've defined public amenities, and you don't want to define it. And they've defined it, but they haven't said for the purposes of the transport zone. It's defined. I have no idea whether their definition suits the activities that you think are appropriate in these zones or not, but it'll cause problems. I think I read your evidence first, and you said no, and then I read theirs, and
I apologise for that.
Exactly the same problem happened in Christchurch, where all these recreational terms came out. Completely in recreation, and they think they know what they all mean. There are private people operating on these many of these zones, and they need to know what activities.
And the consent
planners. Everybody needs to know. The last thing I want is I don't know what activity I am. I think if you could have a think about that, because I think some of these terms are not just widely accepted ordinary meaning. There are lots of perturbations of them.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Answered one of my questions as well. One more. In your Section 42A report, and you're referring to Pembroke Park and the zoning of it. My question is, why have you zoned it for community purposes? Temporary every Sunday morning,
or
Thursday afternoon in the summer. This is not really temporary.
What the parks team market operators?
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I'm just trying to make sure that it's properly provided for in the zone rules, and I can't see anything in the zone rules that actually encompass it, otherwise it may be non-complying. I think you'd be pushing it to say it's temporary, given that it's every week.
Okay, so I just want to understand, I don't know the
right.
The markets.
Yeah, no, there's two of them that operate on Pembroke Park on different days.
And they never talk to each other, so.
No. Fortunately, it's different days.
A weekly event.
Yes. Is that so when it's used for cricket in the summer, which is probably only every third or fourth week, is that a temporary activity?
The soccer team plays there, they have to, they just have to mow their own grass when they do.
There's probably no submission covering it, but it'd be worth checking whether that's actually provided. I'm not sure that the intention is for it to be non-compliant from what Ms. Galavancy tells me. So it may be worth checking, because I'd... Any other questions on open space and recreation?
No, I'm good, thanks.
Thank you.
few years, residential visitor accommodation, RVA, has grown rapidly to become a significant part of the Lakes District visitor accommodation sector. RVA provides a number of benefits to the district, including helping to cater for the growth in tourist numbers visiting the district. RVA has come at a time when the capacity of commercial accommodation has stalled, which has arguably helped accommodate tourism growth. Also providing an important source of revenue to hosts and businesses that service the RVA properties involved, such as cleaners. These benefits need to be balanced against the impact on long-term rental affordability within the period, the resident population of the district grew at a much faster rate than the national. Evidence that from around 2015, the stock of long-term able to quantify the extent to which RVA the long-term rental market. As no information is available on how RVA properties were utilised prior to them being listed. However, against the backdrop of strong population growth, in my view, the growth of RVA has likely had a negative impact on the affordability and capacity of the long-term rental market. Evidence supports this view. Airbnb entered the New Zealand market in 2015, the same time. The yields from short-term rental or RVA in the district are much higher than those for long-term rental. In early 2018, an estimated 700 properties in the district were listed on Airbnb alone. They have characteristics that made them candidates for long-term rental, i.e. half of those properties have been taken from the long-term rental stock. This would have brought the vacancy rate to zero and caused upward pressure on rental prices. The stock of long-term rental properties is expected to grow by between 3% and 6% per annum to avoid further encroachment into the long-term rental market. The number of historical trends suggest that growth rates are likely to be much higher. Was 55%.
Now, Mr. Hayes, in your rebuttal evidence, excuse me, paragraph 318, you say that your definition of year-round availability of properties means those that are available for 90% or more of the year. Is that correct?
That's correct.
How does a dwelling that is only available for 47 weeks of the year suit someone who is looking for a long-term rental for maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
When I've looked at other literature from overseas, we were doing similar research to what I was doing. But I thought I just needed a little bit of space. For a couple of weeks of the year, maintenance. It would have shown up in the data.
You've given us some broad figures of unoccupied dwellings in the district. Did you do a breakdown between the different parts of the district on those unoccupied dwelling percentages? I presume it's based on the 2013 census, yes.
Yes.
The reason I asked is from my own knowledge, Wanaka has a much higher, one of the highest ratios of unoccupied dwellings in the country. Those unoccupied dwellings generally are holiday homes, aren't they? Well, that's what everyone assumes, yes. There'll be a small percentage where people are away at the time. And holiday homes in this district, are they tend to be used by the owners for their own holidays? No. You understand? I mean, question was whether they were holiday homes because people come here for holidays.
Yeah.
I'm just checking, you don't have no knowledge of that situation in this district.
No, I don't. In an ideal world.
In your main brief of evidence, paragraph 3.6, you give us some figures on spends. I'm just checking, are those in 2018 dollars?
3.6.
Yes. have you used current prices all the way through so that we can compare all your prices all the way through?
Where I get the analysis of the impact on the local economy, I
question I had is, does your figures provided in pages 30 and 31, when you set out the density of Airbnb whole price listings for Queenstown and Wanaka, have you made any attempt to map those in relationship to the distribution of unoccupied dwellings?
No, I didn't.
No, happy to let you.
So 3.15 is a reference. new rental.
Yeah,
based on.
It's more likely to be a tighter market than a more open market.
That's what I think.
Not wishing to correct you, but it's Queenstown Lakes.
Sorry.
That's quite
a...
Can I just...
Yeah, you should, but hey.
Could I just interrupt on that? Is the housing stock in Christchurch similar to the housing stock in this district?
I think probably not at the moment.
When did the study start? In other words, was it pre-earthquake?
I think so, yeah.
Well, what I was wondering is, in terms of the age of the houses in Christchurch pre-earthquake and the age of the housing stock in this district, are they similar or different?
No, I'm not sure. I didn't look into that.
Would a district which has, put another way, how frequently do newly built houses in the private market become long-term rentals in your experience? For the whole district or just Queenstown?
The whole district, so
right.
market to reach some kind of an equilibrium. And you're right, as more and more property. And it's built upon. Prices. I think, I guess the concern that I measuring the growth of Airbnb in months. On the availability of rentals, as I said.
Compete with all the other pressures on a place like Queenstown.
We don't.
Well, addendum to that, is there any international experience in more mature markets that would quantify that? There's a couple of studies that were done in
to
New York.
To quantify the impact on long-term rental?
No, to quantify the topping off, Airbnb reaches a plateau.
Yeah, I wasn't able to access data for any of the other markets.
Sorry.
I suppose the other thing I was thinking about, I mean, you can keep increasing the overall supply of houses.
Yeah.
And
confirm for me whether, I wasn't sure whether this was part of the council case or not, but if people, it's probably fair to say there's a fair degree of aspiration around New Zealand and perhaps beyond to live in this district or own a home in this district. But at the moment, if one looks at the cost of that, it's going to be out of realms for many people, because if it's a $1 million house, you could have interest alone could be $50,000 a year just to pay for it.
Mm.
Has the advent of, or is it part of your argument and the council's argument, that the advent of B&B has effectively changed that dynamic by saying, by meaning that whereas previously only this many people could afford that dream of having a house in this district, to going out to that because it now suddenly becomes affordable, whereas it didn't prior to Airbnb? Is there two steps to this? So one's availability and then affordability and the links between those two things. I guess what my question was asking is to some extent about availability. The size of the market that can afford the dream of having a house in Queenstown Lakes District, whether it be as a holiday home or in longer term a permanent home, has basically exploded as a result of this phenomena called Airbnb. So effectively, is it the availability that's really increased more than the affordability? Because you have to make assumptions about whether restrictions on the availability of housing, say for rental, is affected by the availability of housing for rental, because it seems from much of the evidence we're going to hear from the other side that Airbnb is just so attractive that it's making the ability to live here, to buy here, much, much greater than it was.
It is attractive when you compare the yields from short term. Time when population growth continues to rise.
Yeah, well, what I'm taking from what you just said is there's two things going along side by side. One are people who are already in the property market in Queenstown, already own a property, but are saying, I'm going to give up long-term rental in favour of short-term rental, and new entrants, people who don't currently own a property in Queenstown, but Queenstown Lakes District, but who can now afford to. So it's those two groups of people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Is it also possible that the ability to rent out might assist affordability if you have a residential unit with a residential flat, it may be more affordable if you can rent out the residential flat on Airbnb and live in the unit. Isn't that an improving an affordability situation?
It does.
The other thing I was going to ask is, in terms of your own research, is there anything to be learned from overseas experience here, particularly in places that are major tourist meccas, if I can call them that? There's an interesting, well, I shouldn't do this, but on BBC News 2 days ago, there's an article there on what Airbnb really does to a neighbourhood. The states here, Amsterdam, entire home rentals limited to 60 days per year, set to be halved. Barcelona, short-term rentals must be licensed, but no new licenses being issued. Palma, mayor has announced a ban on short-term flat rentals. Paris, short-term rentals limited to 120 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
So has that something that the council and yourself have considered, or was there anything to be learned from these experiences?
Yeah, I did look at a number of overseas studies, and I also took a look at
The 11,000 figure that you came up with, I presume that's after costs and expenses, so that's
No, it's just
confident that 11,000 was a reasonable figure, or were they perhaps rough stab in the dark downplaying that somewhat?
I had to take it at face value, to be honest.
Yep.
It didn't sound outlandish to me, but you know, you're going to.
It did strike me as being, I almost looking at the converse of the small mistake you made of thinking it was a zero missed off with it.
Yeah. I mean, the purpose that Deloitte did was to look at the economy. So, in a sense, the whole kind of tenor of that research. So, based on that, I didn't see any.
That's fine. And I was just wondering, with regard to the spending, there's accommodation, food, groceries, and then other services. What does other services encompass? Sorry, that's on page, it's 6.2 of your primary. Where I have interest in anything else. Goes through other leisure activities, entertainment, transportation, and then other services.
Yeah, those would have been the categories.
With a stroke of luck, it might be bed tax, who knows?
Bed
tax, just
bed tax.
Thinking positively.
It looks like the kind of thing that would be a catch-all for anything.
Yeah. And also in your original evidence, you talked about the research. This is the Washmuth studies of Airbnb ear DNA in New York City metro region.
Yeah.
And 12% of the hosts were commercial operators.
Yeah.
Can you expand what you mean by commercial operator? That's an investment group or?
Right. This was another attempt.
It would be helpful because one of the concerns that's often expressed as one of the biggest fears is that you end up in the Queensland Lakes scenario of a residential street becoming a de facto hotel.
Yeah.
I know it was quite interesting that 12% of the hosts earned, so roughly 10% earned 30% of the revenue. So they're obviously larger players.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just a depth into that, whether that's a person that's, you know, had an investment property or a person that's had multiple, and obviously an apartment building is
over
scale.
Yeah, I think a lot of them had multiple properties.
It would seem to, I mean, Queensland Lakes would be ripe for exactly that sort of operation in terms of that there are a significant number of large players that earn earnings outside of the district that could come in.
I don't have any information
on
that. It would depend on, you know.
Yep. And what, but obviously the returns from standard rental would prohibit that, whereas then the returns that you're talking about, much greater returns in Airbnb, would encourage that.
Yeah.
Just this is more anecdotal, but the again in the Queensland Lakes district, it's always been a boom and bust. It's been a peak and trough. And would you have any idea on what's part of that scale, in your opinion, that we're currently floating on?
In recent history, I wouldn't. And this is actual data.
don't learn the mistakes of history, you're destined to repeat them. Now, it's just because anecdotally, a lot of like the room rates have gone up to a point where they're unacceptable. A, B, and B has flourished.
Yeah.
But everything seems to be settling back.
Yeah, and I've heard anecdotally that there's a lot of
just on taking up what you just said, though, there could be a counter to that, and you'd be aware of the government's proposed changes to tenancy laws and regulations, including,
yep,
as I understand it, removing the ability to basically just terminate a lease. It's a bit like Europe, where if you rent a property, like you can in Germany, you can't be chucked out until you choose to leave.
Yep.
Now, would you expect that to act as a real incentive for people to move into Airbnb and do it fairly quickly?
In terms of your expertise as an economist, do you have what seems to be the issues that are driving the council with this variation of increasing unaffordability of housing and a high growth rate and presumably at the same time an inability to supply adequate long-term rental accommodation? Is zoning the sole way to deal with those issues from an economic point of view? Well, yes, I'd like you to do that, and I'd like you to, in thinking about that, is to the degree of impact local government in New Zealand through zoning can have on these things compared to central government.
I suppose just linked to that is there was that question I asked you before about the overseas examples, and I understand your explanation as to why you don't think they're comparable, but
yeah.
It's just interesting. I suspect that some of those particular authorities don't use RMA-type means to control it. I mean, look at Palmer. The mayor has announced a ban on short-term flat rentals. That may be a power that the council has completely independent of resource management type functions of Barcelona or other places.
And a power that New Zealand local authorities don't have.
Which is important to us in terms of Section 32.
Yes.
We should have.
Well, I have there's no other questions, Mr. Hayes?
No, thank you. Can I just reflect back on you what was the final question?
Yes.
Yeah, so you're asking whether in terms of managing
in essence, but also I distinguish between the affordability issue and the availability of long-term rental, because they're not necessarily directly related. I mean, if you look at somewhere like Tauranga, they also have an affordability issue. They don't have the tourists that we have in this district, and I think they have a long-term rental problem as well.
Right.
But other districts in the country facing the same issues that don't necessarily have tourism.
Yeah.
That's why I'd like to see if it's a residential visitor accommodation problem or is it another problem. And that's why I'd like your expertise as an economist to reflect on that. Sounds from what you're saying that they're some of the incentives for people to do certain things. I'm wondering what are the wide range of incentives that are driving.
If you could sort out the global economy as well, that'd be greatly appreciated.
What's that, sorry?
And if you could sort out the global economy as well, that'd be great.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Before we move on, I think we'll take, rather than starting with presumably both Ms. Devlin and Ms. Bobos together? Or?
It was meant to be my suggestion with Jim, so
absolutely. Yes.
I'm just reflecting on currently this morning. Maybe we can actually call Ms. Bobines first.
Okay. Right. We'll have the afternoon adjournment first and then we'll move on to that.
Thank you.
We'll adjourn till